you sit in traffic now. But later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Matt Ajak.
Hi.
Out in Colorado. What's going on, man? How's Dirty Denver treating you?
It's been rainy here past week and a half.
There we go.
You can even believe it.
I feel like it's been raining everywhere in America the last week and a half.
Yeah, I guess we can't really complain because it rains really hard for like 30 minutes and then it's completely dry 30 minutes later. Yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. It's, you know, we're in the doldrums of summer. What do they say? The dog days? Dog days of summer here, August 20th. NFL season right around the corner. College football, if you're into that kind of thing. And, baseball's about to heat up, Jeff. It's about to be that time of year.
Yeah, getting to some interesting playoff races, see what happens there. We're not talking that today, though, Matt. We're talking indie ball. Are you ready, baby? We're talking a little independent leagues. The Atlantic League, the Frontier League, the American Association, the Pioneer League, and the MLB Draft League, which, of course, turns into an independent league after the MLB Draft. So, Matt, this is your idea. You want to talk some indie leagues and sort of where things are going. So let's jump right into it without further ado.
Yeah. This is just piggybacking off of previous episodes where we talked about the state of the game and the state of opportunities for players and all that. And I had an interesting conversation last week with somebody who had told me that there was an AHL team, which is the minor leagues for the NHL, that was unaffiliated, right? So that's an entire AHL, if you're not familiar, American Hockey League?
American Hockey League. It's the number one minor league hockey league.
It's like AAA. It's AAA of hockey.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really below that, but it doesn't have hockey doesn't have an expansive system the way baseball does, where there's, you know, five levels. You know, there's some ECHL teams that have affiliation. There used to be a West Coast league that was more Midwest into the West Coast. I think those teams have since been replaced. I won't even say it might have been called the International League.
I think it was called the International League.
You know, that had, you know,
back to the day when I was playing NHL 2004 on the PlayStation 2.
Some other leagues. I think now at this point you could probably consider like the ECHL, like the AA of hockey. The American Hockey League is the AAA of hockey. And there's been some others, but the American Hockey League is the most historic one. It's been around the longest. And then you have the ECHL, which is mostly where your goons come from. That's where the fighters used to come from, was from like the ECHL. It was like the movie Slapshot. Like, teams from the American Hockey League would sign a guy from the ECHL, and more often than not would be the guy who came out with the fourth line and just goomed it up. And minor league hockey goons.
And it's hockey knowledge.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I was a big hockey player. I went to a lot of Providence Bruins games growing up over a course of a, you know, 4 or 5 year period in time. So I got some knowledge there. And then there's junior hockey, which is the equivalent of like what high school is. Some college age players as well. That's bigger in Canada. You'll get a lot of guys that are like Division I American prospects that will play in some of the major junior leagues throughout the United States. That became a much bigger part of the equation in the mid to late 90s when I would have been a prospect, but alas, was not good enough to be one of those sort of prospects.
Yeah. Hockey.
Yeah, I took you off your game there.
Yeah, you took me off my game there for a second. Anyway, I'm back on it. AHL. So for the people listening that aren't super into hockey, give you the quick rundown. Similar to Major League Baseball, but not similar at the same time. I think there's a lot more stability in minor league affiliates in baseball. I think it's a lot more like shuffling the deck every 2 to 3 years. Your favorite hockey team might have a different affiliate in the AHL every 3 years because the contracts just kind of shuffle. There's some teams that share affiliates in the AHL, if I'm reading what I read correctly. And but it's more or less when the NHL draft happens, these prospects have to go somewhere to develop that isn't at the NHL level and in some capacity. I know that it's complicated, but these guys end up in the AHL one step away from a call up to the NHL. And that's part of their development journey is going through AHL. So anyway, it's minor league hockey. Last year, there was a team called the Chicago Wolves. This was from a conversation that I had with a friend who was in the know, and he said it was the first time ever, or at least in long recent memory, that there was an unaffiliated team playing in the AHL. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. So he had said that players on that unaffiliated team in the AHL could sign with an affiliated team in the AHL or with an affiliated parent club and then play on another team in the AHL at any time. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting concept, Jeff. Could you imagine an independent hockey team playing against a bunch of affiliated hockey teams? And if a player's doing really well, well, it's kind of a no-brainer that you would try and sign that player because here they are performing against all of the other top players that are one step away from the NHL. And that had me thinking on a lot of conversations and a lot of discussions that we've had in the past couple of weeks about dwindling opportunities and the clogging of the pipeline and where does the toolsy player go? And, you know, where does the 22 or 23 year old kid go out of college? And if he wants to continue to play, is there a real shot? I mean, we had all these discussions about, you know, kind of the future of the game and the future of the pro pipeline and, you know, talent slipping through the cracks. And it's like, oh, well, Major League Baseball already has affiliation with independent leagues in this country. So there's, as you mentioned before, the Frontier League, the Atlantic League, the American Association, the MLB Draft League, Pioneer League. They're all MLB affiliated leagues. And as they currently stand, they serve different demographics of players. And at any time, players can be, their contracts can be purchased for a fee. Jeff, do you know what that fee is? Any chance off the top of your head? I know it's, it used to be different per league. Maybe it's the same across the board now. But if Jeff Ponce was throwing really well in the Atlantic League and the Cincinnati Reds needed a Jeff Ponce, they would have to pay his Atlantic League team. I think it's like 50K.
I think it's 15K.
15K. I was close.
Anyway, yeah, I think it's 15K.
That's kind of the gist of how it works is, all right, so Jeff's throwing well in the Atlantic League, and then the Cincinnati Reds want to sign him. Cincinnati Reds have to pay 15K to the team that Jeff's on in the Atlantic League to buy him out, and then they can sign him to a pro contract to come play affiliated ball with Cincinnati Reds. So that happens. That happens frequently over the course of, you know, the calendar year over the summer. As needs arise in minor league baseball from arm injuries and whatever else is going on, teams get beat up. As we know, minor league consolidation, there aren't as many roster spots. So if someone gets hurt, you better have, you know, an idea of where you're going to go fill those innings, whether it's a position player or a pitcher, whatever it is. So that's kind of what the independent baseball league landscape looks like currently in America. And hearing this bit about the unaffiliated AHL team last year, they are now affiliated again, Jeff. I just want to throw that out there. They were with the Carolina Hurricanes prior to last year, and they just signed a 3-year deal in the spring to be with the Carolina Hurricanes moving forward. So there is not going to be an unaffiliated AHL team for this year. Now, we're just spitballing here, Jeff. I know that, you know, this is, you know, potentially not as easy as we're going to make it sound. But interesting thought here in terms of expanding opportunities, making independent baseball more attractive to players that want to continue, potentially continue their career, but don't get an opportunity to get drafted and go into affiliated baseball. And another alternative to the player that, you know, or another option for the player that, you know, kind of gets lost in the college shuffle. What if we could expand the involvement of independent baseball in America and make independent baseball more attractive? I guess that's ultimately the gist of this thought, and it all stemmed from the unaffiliated AHL team. So before we get into what the actual idea is, just again, for a little bit more background, I did some homework this morning, just real quick. And since the spring, so I used roughly April 1st as the cutoff, I looked at the transaction logs for the Atlantic League, Frontier League, American Association, Pioneer Baseball League. Did not look at the ML. I tried to look at the MLB Draft League, but it doesn't become an independent league until August. So I don't think there have been a ton of signings out of that league. Maybe there's a couple. But they're also not posted on their website, so can't really do anything with that. But the Atlantic League has seen 20 pitchers. This isn't professional contracts. This is affiliated ball contracts. So there have been other players that have been signed to. I saw a lot of Mexico on the transaction logs. A lot of players are signed out of these leagues to go to Mexico. Maybe a handful of other leagues, but mostly Mexico or affiliated baseball. The Atlantic League, which is, Jeff, I think that's the most experienced league when it comes to, I think, age of player. I think it's probably the oldest average age of player, and I think that's where a lot of affiliated guys that are still trying to keep on keeping on, I think they bounce back to the Atlantic League. I know there's a lot of big leaguers who have gone down to the Atlantic League and then come back up to the big leagues. I think Jackie Bradley was in there at the beginning of this year. Again, for the people listening, the Atlantic League is probably the place that big league clubs would go fishing for experience at the upper end of the minor leagues if they had a spot to fill or potentially for a big league opportunity. 20 pitchers during the 2024 season, 20 pitchers have signed to affiliated contracts or had their contracts bought by affiliated clubs. 19 hitters. So kind of an even split there. Frontier League, American Association. I'm not overly intimate with independent leagues. I think they're similar. They're kind of like that next tier down. 8 pitchers, 1 hitter out of the Frontier League, 13 pitchers, 5 hitters out of the American Association. And then you got the Pioneer Baseball League, which has been kind of pinned as like a developmental league. So they want younger players. They want guys that have less affiliated experience. I think if you have more than like 2 or 3 years of affiliated experience or you're over the age of 24, you're going to have to fact check me on these if you're listening. Then you're not eligible to play in the Pioneer Baseball League. So it's definitely targeting younger players, players with less affiliated experience, to kind of have a different demographic of player. 8 pitchers, 5 hitters out of the Pioneer Baseball League have been signed during the 2024 season. And that brings the total across those 4 leagues to 49 pitchers, 30 hitters, and 79 total players that have been signed out of those 4 independent leagues this year to affiliated professional baseball to fill some sort of role. We don't know, I guess, to what extent those players have stuck with those organizations. We don't know to the extent of, you know, how long they'll be there, if it's a short-term thing, band-aid fix, whatever it is. But 79 total, 49 pitchers, 30 hitters, that's 62% pitchers. Which makes sense, Jeff. We discussed in the past why pitchers are easier to sign out of independent baseball leagues. And that's because it's, you know, it's pretty apparent, you know, if a guy's throwing 97 to 99 and he's got a banger slider and he's performing in an independent league, it's like, well, we know that you can look at that and that's going to perform to a certain extent in affiliated baseball because it's really good stuff. You know, is he going to throw enough strikes? That's a different question. The other thing is there's obviously a much higher demand for pitchers that can come in and give you innings. Because as we've seen at every level of competitive baseball, pitchers drop like flies through the summer. So anyway, that's kind of the landscape here. But the thought here, Jeff, was if every night last year, the Chicago Wolves players were playing against affiliated players in the AHL, and you know, Jeff, you cover the minor leagues, you cover professional baseball, you go to double A games, triple A games, A ball games, whatever it is. And like Jeff, other than yourself and the local fans, who are at these games in minor league baseball?
Well, I mean, you it sort of has to, it depends on the location, you know. Obviously, the fan numbers are going to vary from New Hampshire to Worcester and Hartford. You're going to see a fair amount of scouts in lower levels, low A, high A. You don't see as many in AAA. You'll see maybe one or two. Kind of the same thing with New Hampshire. You'll see one or two. I'm sure that AA affiliates that have other affiliates a little bit closer, you might see them more. But you'll see scouts. I mean, you don't see a huge number. It's not like the Cape or college games or where you see a ton of scouts. Obviously, that's amateur versus pro. But
you got pro scouts, but you also have farm directors, assistant farm directors, coordinators kind of making the rounds through the minor league season.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah, making their stops. So, I mean, let's apply that to the AHL. If you know you got your director of player development, or you got some scouts, or whatever it is, at an AHL game, and you're playing against a bunch of unaffiliated players, and they see a player performing particularly well against a talented affiliated team, then I don't know, maybe that gives you a little bit more confidence that, oh, you know, it's like, one, he's in front of you, the exposure element, but two, it's like, well, he's performing against players that we view as talented, so maybe he belongs. So I had this idea. I'm not going to hold off on the idea for much longer. The idea was that let's take the Atlantic League, and it's the older league, the more experienced league. So let's kind of equate that to, I don't want to say AAA, but let's say we take the top two teams in the Atlantic League from the 2024 season per the standings, and they get to play a six-week schedule, a six-week tour to open up the 2025 season, bouncing around AAA, the International League. Because, like, geographically, it's got to make sense, too. You don't want to send them, you know, out west, you know, Albuquerque or anything like that, right? So you line them up with the International League. You create, like, this little bit of a crossover. It doesn't have to be, like, a, hey, these guys are competing against each other every night. But, like, say you take a month, 6 weeks, and we know, as you mentioned, that, you know, they're going to be affiliated either scouts or personnel of some sort at these games because they make their stops. And we know that all of these ballparks are outfitted with technology to be able to go into a data model to potentially make a decision. So if you are one of the best teams in the Atlantic League and you're a player that's signing to the Atlantic League and you want potentially a chance to get seen, what better way than if there was a mingling with a AAA league, and then you go and you perform and you have a nice run for you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks against AAA competition. And maybe that gives, you know, like a data set that clubs can be confident in to make a decision off of, or at the, you know, you get seen the exposure element right before your eyes. So, I don't know. I'm just, you know, trying to think of creative ways of like making independent baseball potentially more appealing. And if an independent baseball is more appealing, then maybe it becomes a more viable option. Maybe there's more talent that's drawn to the idea of going the indie ball route because there are these opportunities, right? So then you could take the other leagues and you could pair them up with other minor league leagues and do the same thing. You know, you think about the Pioneer Baseball League, okay, younger league. It's in the Mountain West region of the country. You could pair it up with, you know, what's the league in the Northwest, Jeff, that has, I think it's high A.
The Northwest.
The Northwest League. You pair it up with the Northwest League, and you do the same thing. I don't know. I mean, look, it's a thought. It's a thought, you know. I think there is I was actually surprised that it was 62% pitchers to 38% hitters. I thought that would have been even more lopsided. When you look at the contracts that have been purchased out of independent baseball leagues this year, because my general feel is that it's a pretty bleak, without having the numbers in front of me, I would have thought that it was a pretty bleak, outlook for a position player trying to continue their career in independent baseball and then get a chance to go into affiliated baseball. So, I think specifically back on like Reese Alexiades, right? I'm going to use this guy as an example. He's a Savannah banana now. But Reese Alexiades had like a nice, he was off to a nice start in 2020. Pepperdine. Yeah, he hit 403 in 2020 at Pepperdine. Before COVID shut everything down and 71 plate appearances. And then in 2021, he played 35 games. He hit 389 with an 1100 OPS, 7 bombs, 4 stolen bases, 25 walks, 28 strikeouts, and 158 plate appearances. He was 23 at that time. So he goes to the Pioneer League, Ogden, 37 games, hit 391 with an OPS over 1,000. Goes back to Ogden. The next year for a full season hits 330 with a 974 OPS with 14 home runs, 13 stolen bases. And then in 2023, in his third year in Ogden, he hit 326 with an 1100 OPS with 29 bombs, 29 stolen bases. He really balled out and not a sniff. And it's crazy just because, I mean, going back to 2020, I mean, that's 4 straight years of performance, right? And I can speak firsthand, low to 9. So he's really athletic and the impact's real and, you know, kind of has that talent to stand out, would have had the talent to stand out from a tools perspective in affiliated baseball for sure. And then obviously had some performance to back it up, but never really got that opportunity. And, you know, this year took an opportunity with the Savannah Bananas and that's a pretty good outcome for him as a player, but that's kind of a player that is a player that 5 years ago with a minor leagues not consolidated and more roster spots and in a bigger draft, like he's playing somewhere right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy, and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste, because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And I think there's a couple of success stories recently out of independent ball. And I think, you know, it happens a lot with relievers, guys that have dealt with injuries, certain circumstances. I think we saw a lot of guys that were initially signed prior to the pandemic in that big sort of exodus of players out of the minor league system. When they shrunk the minor leagues, they eliminated short season, they changed around affiliates, and they cut a ton of contracts. A lot of those guys ended up in independent ball. I believe Cam Boozer, who's with the Red Sox now, is a good story. A guy that had dealt with a bunch of different injuries, etc. We've spent some time in indie ball. Another guy that's in AAA right now with the Red Sox, and he's on their top 30 list. A little bit older, but had some success in AA. Had some success after signing last year. The last year that he had been in affiliated ball was 2018. That's Zach Penrod, who's kind of a burly left-hander with pretty good stuff, has some velocity, you know, has some feel for some secondaries. He's probably a reliever long-term, but over 35 and a third innings this year in AA with that stacked Portland team, at a 37.1% strikeout rate to a 9.1% walk rate, 2.8 ERA. Hasn't been quite as good from an ERA perspective in AAA over eight different outings. He's got five starts covering about 18 and two-thirds innings. Still getting a lot of strikeouts, like a lot of strikeouts. He's got a 33% strikeout rate, 12.5% walk rate. So there is some command issues. And, you know, he's just been really unlucky. He's got a 435 batting average on balls in play, which is turned into a 6.27 ERA, but if you look at the estimators, 3.03 FIP, 3.51 xFIP. Like I said, he's got good stuff. He's left-handed, probably an interesting left-handed reliever. And this is a guy that was out of affiliated ball, I think in 2020 is when he got cut, but he had been injured in like 2018, missed all of 2019, was coming back, and then just timing-wise. So he ends up in independent ball. He's now on the cusp of the major leagues. The Red Sox have had another signing like that out of indie ball that was pretty good. Another guy that has arguably as much power as anybody in affiliated baseball, including the majors, just in terms of raw power, 6'8" Carson McCusker, who was actually initially drafted by the Brewers back in 2017, didn't sign, went to Oklahoma State for a bunch of years, ended up with Tri-City in the Frontier League, which famously I actually saw McCusker play and homer because he was in the same team as Kumar Rocker. If you remember, Rocker went to the independent league. That was sort of part of his journey. Didn't go back to Vanderbilt after not signing with the Mets. Pitches in the independent league, shows pretty well, ends up going higher in the draft for the Rangers. Right now, Rocker looks pretty good. That's kind of another story. We won't get off track. But McCusker was on that team. He's 6'8", 250 pounds, and the numbers aren't bad this year. There's a ton of swing and miss here. He has 111 strikeouts in 94 games. So let's look at that first off. But hitting 281, 359, 466, you know, this is one of those guys where the power tool, like legitimately it's 80 raw power, right? Like I think it's an 80. You look at what the raw power numbers, what he's able to do there. He's an interesting player. And I think that a guy like this, you know, gets sort of doesn't get an opportunity out of college after not signing when he was initially drafted, you know, out of Folsom Lake Community College there in Folsom, California. Goes to Oklahoma State, you know, hit okay, had a pretty decent final year there. Strikeouts have always been an issue, but he's got so much power that he ends up in affiliated ball. And, you know, over 94 games this season, has had a pretty good season in double A. And it's just super interesting because he is 6'8" and just has a ton of natural raw power. I think that's kind of what you're seeing. You're seeing a lot of relievers, and then you see these interesting guys in independent ball that maybe have a standout or a plus tool. And when you have a plus tool, there's a chance that you're going to get an opportunity. I think like McCusker is a perfect example of that. Penrod's a perfect example of that on the pitching side, where a lefty that throws 95 to 96. I know there's been others, you know, recently. I'm trying to think of, there was another guy that I saw an independent ball in the Midwest that like hit 101, 102. That was like an affiliated ball for the Mets, I think, or Brewers for a couple of years. You'll find some guys that maybe had like grade issues in college, off the field issues in college, just didn't have a skill that was developed until they were maybe in their early 20s. And then all of a sudden they get back out there. And then of course there's a lot of sort of retread MLB players that more often than not, they're not going to get back into the league, but every so often you get a guy like Rich Hill. And I think people forget Rich Hill was in the Cubs rotation, you know, in his mid to late 20s, kind of fizzled out in pro ball, goes and pitches for the Long Island Ducks, kind of discovers that he has this super unique curveball, starts to lean into that, you know, ends up signing a contract, I think it was with the Red Sox, and then gets another deal with the A's. And then that's sort of how the second act of Rich Hill happened, was really being a springboard off of independent ball. Another guy here, guys who have a position change. It could be a position player that starts to pitch. That's a great opportunity, a great place for someone to do that. Or it could be the opposite. It could be a pitcher that goes and pursues a career now as a position player. We saw that with David Peralta. Peralta was a pitcher in the Cardinal system, goes into indie ball. I believe he was another Long Island Ducks guy. Shows that he can hit, gets into affiliated ball, and a guy that had a really nice sort of second act in his career, and you know, for a small bit of time was probably like a top 30 bat in MLB maybe 4 years ago, had some really good seasons, really productive player for the Diamondbacks. So I think it's interesting how you can kind of it's also a good place that you can kind of reinvent yourself as well. And if you do have any sort of upside, maybe at a different position or doing something differently than what you did as a professional, you can go there, kind of try it out, see if it's going to work against somewhat quality competition, right? Professional players, some former MLB players, and you can get signed out of there. So I think like there's always talent lurking. And I think, you know, a big part of this, and something that I think 4 years ago was a big part of the conversation, but has teetered off a little bit, and we'd have to sort of look at the results. But post-pandemic, with the shrinking of short season, did push a lot of players into the independent leagues that maybe would have been on, you know, the affiliated rosters, the limits of like 165, it was formerly 180. that keeps shrinking in terms of domestic players that can be, you know, whether it's on the domestic complex leagues and then the four tiers of minor league baseball, there's just less jobs, less spots. It doesn't mean that, you know, there's not opportunities for these guys. They have to sort of go to the independent leagues. And I think, like, we've seen that kind of steadily, a different flow of players that might have been, you know, in the old 40-round draft, might have been 30-round picks, and undersigning in the 20-something round, you know, that would have kind of kicked around the system for a few years when there were less restrictions and limits on the number of players that you could have. So there is opportunity right now in independent ball. I think it's probably one of the reasons that the MLB Draft League has sort of existed the way that they do, in terms of going from, you know, like a summer wooden bat league to an extent. It's kind of a showcase league before the draft. And then they flip the switch and, you know, they go more the independent route, because there needs to be opportunities for those guys to play in some sort of competitive professional league. And, you know, I think the value is there, and we're in a different period in time than we've been in with affiliated ball over the last 4 years, and particularly the last two or three. I think that's really grown. And it's a viable option. I think it's a viable option for players that, you know, want to continue to play, think they do have something that can, you know, they can offer to a professional team, go there, play hard, perform, train, do the work you got to do, and try to get back and or get into affiliated ball. So it's a viable pathway. And I think, you know, part of this conversation is that we're in a date in time when there's less opportunities in professional baseball. There's less opportunities for some of these players to develop, you know, maybe a McCusker or somebody like that, you know, gets swallowed up initially and needed those couple of years to kind of figure things out to then get that opportunity in Double A. He's older at 25 or 26, but, you know, I think when you look at this guy's EVs and they rival that of Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton, there's a place for a guy like that in professional baseball. It's just a matter of, you know, him getting to a point where he's making enough contact, which is still not a whole lot, that he's a viable professional player. I think, you know, that's all a big part of this conversation, is with the restructuring of the minor leagues, with the org limits that are now in place that have gotten stricter and stricter over the last two or three years coming out of the pandemic. And then, you know, these opportunities for players, you know, need to exist. And I think it has put a greater onus on independent leagues. It just maybe hasn't produced the number of players that we had anticipated. But a lot of those guys slide into the radar too. And I think, you know, they pop in AAA or they get up to the majors, and then there's this great story of like, oh yeah, that was an indie guy that was signed 2 or 3 years ago. You know, the Red Sox, like I said, in particular, have a couple of them in Boozer and then Zach Penrod.
Yeah, I agree with you that there's a lot of talent in indie ball, and I think there's a lot of really good success stories. I think part of indie ball, I don't want to say it's issue, is there's like a stigma about it, and then there isn't, maybe these stories aren't promoted properly to make it an appealing option or a viable option, right? So, I guess to juxtapose Reese Alexiades, who was never drafted and performed for 3 or 4 years there between Pepperdine and Ogden in the Pioneer League, you know, you've got Glenn Allen Hill Jr., who was drafted in the fourth round by the Arizona Diamondbacks back in 2019, got his first taste of professional baseball right after the draft, and then 2020 hit. So he ended up playing in an independent league because he wasn't at the alt site, right? He signed for almost $1 million. So you're a high school kid, you signed for almost $1 million. You play a little bit of rookie ball, like 2 months, and then your first full year of affiliated baseball doesn't exist because of COVID. So you go play in an indie ball league up in Illinois, I believe is where he went. And then he came back, and in his first full year of affiliated ball, Visalia, A ball, struck out almost 50% of the time, didn't have a particularly good year. And then when he needed to repeat the level the next year, he was a part-time player straight out of the chute. Kind of a tough draw for a high school player who got paid almost $1 million. So he ends up getting released by Arizona. He spent the last chunk of that year in the Frontier League. I believe it's Frontier League. Yep, Frontier League, Joliet. Went back to Joliet for a full season last year. And then ahead of this year, I know he had
interest from a few clubs, and ultimately the Colorado Rockies were the ones who pulled the trigger on it. But Toolsy, son of a big leaguer, everyone knows Glen Allen Hill, for his home run that is probably still going in Chicago. But this year, Jeff, between A ball and high A, kind of as a versatile, played some outfield, played some second base for you. I mean, he's got 15 home runs, 14 of 14 on stolen bases. He's hitting 260. And he now has almost as many games played in high A as he does in A ball. High A, he's hitting 270 with a 917 OPS, 9 home runs, 8 stolen bases in 32 games there. So there's a Toolsy player that kind of had like a turbulent start to his professional affiliated career, and fortunately was picked up and is having success in affiliated ball. So do want to give a shout out there to Glenn. But kind of, you know, this is, I guess, like, Jeff, the thought here, part of the thought here is like, okay, well, how do we make independent baseball more appealing? How do we make it a more realistic place for players to potentially get signed out of? Because if it's more realistic for players to get signed out of there and that's promoted, then more players are going to consider it potentially sooner. We know age is an issue. We've talked about age being an issue and potentially getting into affiliated baseball. Nobody likes you when you're 23. You know, a lot of players that are getting signed into professional baseball, affiliated baseball, are on the younger side of things, right? So let's look at a player like Kyle Hess, who I saw on a transaction log this morning while doing my research. He played in the Atlantic League to start the year, 25 years old. This was a player that I liked out of Pittsburgh, and he did play on the Cape. You might have seen him, Jeff. He was in Bourne back in 2019. But yeah, he was at Pittsburgh, really toolsy guy. 2021, he hit 263, was 782 OPS, 5 home runs, and ended up getting hurt, I think, down the stretch there and didn't get a full season. So he had 43 games at Pitt in 2021. Got healthy to go to the draft league, hit 346 in the draft league with over 1,000 OPS in 28 plate appearances. Didn't get drafted, goes back to Pitt, played 29 games at Pitt, hit 330 with 8 bombs and a 1,100 OPS as a 23-year-old in 2022. Went back to the draft league, didn't get drafted, goes back to Pitt again, hit 330, 10 bombs, 9 stolen bases, with a 1041 OPS in 2023. So now he's 24 years old and he's been at Pitt for 5 years. And he's kind of, you know, he's a toolsy guy, but like, we know that if you're 24 years old, doesn't matter what your college numbers are at this point, like there's very, very little opportunity in affiliated baseball at that point. So in 2024, played for Lancaster in the Atlantic League. In 9 games, he hit 433, 3 home runs, and the Twins, apparently they like to go shopping for toolsy independent league players. The Twins grabbed him, and he had immediate success in A-ball, got promoted to high A, and seems like he's struggling a little bit there, but he's in high A currently with the Twins, and that was kind of his route. But now, Jeff, he's 25 years old. Per Baseball Reference, he's 2.8. years older than the average at the high A level. What if after the 2022 season, when he hit 330 with an 1100 OPS at Pitt, fourth year at Pitt, he had decided to go into independent ball at that point and, you know, potentially get signed as a 24-year-old instead of as a 25-year-old, you know, and now instead of being almost 3 years older for the age level, in high A at the present moment, he's only, you know, 1.8 to 2 years older than the present age level. You know what I mean? And like, maybe there's, I'm not saying that there isn't a realistic shot that Kyle Hess is going to be a big leaguer, but like, you know, I think maybe there's more interest in that guy if he's 22 or 23 years old performing an indie ball, as opposed to 23 or 24 years old performing an indie ball. I think that's kind of the point. It's like, okay, what if it was presented to Kyle Hess that instead of going back to Pitt for your fifth year, that you've got a better chance of going and signing with an indie ball team. And if you perform there, you know, you've got a chance to get signed and get into affiliated ball that way. So
I think that's kind of like the whole thing to try and put a bow on this. I don't want to take this too much longer because it's just an idea. This isn't something that currently exists, right? But I mean, if you could create the like a look, MLB created this thing, and it and there's a lot of people listening to this that are gonna have to Google this. It's called MLB One. This was announced a couple years ago. One Baseball. MLB's plan to develop talent, next generation of fandom. This was an article from 2020. You don't really hear a whole lot about this One Baseball concept, but the One Baseball concept was an idea of getting everything kind of under the same umbrella, moving in the same direction. And that's kind of, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure that's where the idea of affiliating the independent baseball leagues to Major League Baseball, that all falls under One Baseball. Right. So if MLB is trying to find different ways, unique ways to get talent in, to improve the pipelines, to, you know, create more opportunities, is this a development of One Baseball where it's like, okay, well, we're going to expand our partnership with these independent leagues. We're going to create these opportunities for this fusion crossover for the top teams in the independent leagues to play affiliated baseball. They're going to get these opportunities, as we mentioned earlier, to, you know, be playing against affiliated players, better opportunity than just beating up on each other in the independent leagues. And, you know, maybe that's just another avenue to consider if you are a player. Jeff, especially on the back of all of these changes in college baseball that we've already discussed, go back, listen to previous podcasts. Like, there are players that are going to get hung up in college baseball that are going to just not going to have opportunities. You know what I mean? They're going to kick from here to there to here to there. And if they don't perform, then they're going to be 22 years old with, you know, less than 150 plate appearances in college. So that's more or less the point is like, okay, we've talked a lot about this. You know, what are some potential solutions? We don't want to just be the guys that discuss problems.
Sure. Yeah. I think one idea that came to mind with me is I think after the season, you put together an independent league all-star team. And not necessarily the top performers, but there's scouts that work this stuff. There's people that, you know, have evaluation ability, managers, et cetera, coaches that have insight. Create an independent league all prospect team. The guys that you think have legitimate shots, send them to the Arizona Fall League and have an independent league compete against the other teams in the Arizona Fall League. Then on top of it, you might be able to even pull some of the pitchers here and there to different teams as teams start to run into innings limits, et cetera. Because I think that's the big thing in a lot of these showcase leagues. It happened on the Cape. It's happened all throughout summer leagues. Certainly happens in Arizona where there starts to be guys that get pulled in, right? That's just because they have innings. And, you know, I think there's an opportunity for some of these guys to maybe go out there in that sort of environment, play against good players, sort of go through a 6-week season where they're competing against other affiliated prospects. It'd be interesting. I think there could be a handful of guys each year that get signed out of there and signed sort of at the right time. So, you know, they're getting signed in November or October, early December.
I love that idea.
And then end up in spring training.
As somebody who's wearing a scorpion hat over there, I mean, you know, the Arizona Fall League as someone who's covered it. People have said for the past couple of years that it's not necessarily that it's trending in the wrong direction, but it's, you know, in terms of like the players that are going out there, it's not what it was a couple of years ago because teams are a lot more careful with their pitchers.
It's like the Cape. I mean, you'll get great. You're there for the hitters, right? You will get some interesting talent though. And I think the thing with the Arizona, like that league, is if you have injured pitchers who come back at the end of the season and they still need to meet their innings limit, like a Kumar Rocker this year, right? He's probably like sort of the perfect fit. It wouldn't shock me if Cade Cavalli is fully healthy now at the end of the season. I know he's throwing. Maybe Cavalli goes out there, but they have limited windows. Ricky Tiedemann was one of those last year where made 4 starts. All right, good enough, move on. And what happens is you'll get relievers once you get like into the last 2-3 weeks of the season, you'll get relievers and starters that, and it's not a lot, but a handful of guys that will get sent to the Arizona Fall League simply because they're local. They can get there quickly. They have a pulse. and they still maybe have some innings left, which is kind of similar to the Cape, where you're seeing some of these D3 arms, stuff like that, where they're guys that are local and have a pulse, and it's like, hey, you know, LSU sent all their guys back. You know, we had this Auburn righty that he got sent back. He got shut down for the season, so on and so forth. Because, you know, like the innings limits all throughout baseball at this point are super restrictive. And it's restricting a lot of these leagues. I mean, when I was younger, you used to see a bunch of guys go 30 plus innings in the Cape, 40 innings in the Cape, you know, maybe even more. Remember, like Brad Ziegler had a summer where I think he pitched like 45, 50 innings. Like guys just go out there and like take a turn every 5 days and go 5 or 6 innings. You do not see that any longer on the Cape.
It was 2015 and Mitchell Jordan. I don't know if you remember that name. Mitchell Jordan was dominant on the Cape that summer, 2015. He threw 43 innings. And he had a 0.21 ERA in 43 innings. I mean, at that time, I thought I was seeing the second coming, right? But that was kind of one of the last times that I saw a guy go over 40 innings on the Cape. Jeff, I got one last idea here. Actually, go ahead, and then I'll say my line. What do you got?
No, go ahead. It's all you.
This is the last thing I'm going to say about indie ball. Imagine, Jeff, that following the Major League Baseball draft in July, let's call it like the first week of August, there's an indie ball draft, right? Where teams in indie ball can draft players that were draft eligible that didn't get drafted. All right, so hear me out. This creates potentially like a portal where, okay, it's now known where you can put your name in the hat to be selected in this indie ball draft. So you basically have to declare. So if you're a college player, high school player, JUCO player, whatever it is, you declare for the indie ball draft. Because I think part of, I don't want to say the issue with getting into indie ball is that like it's way, they don't have extensive scouting departments in indie ball. So a lot of it's word of mouth recommendation. But if you're a player that is interested in playing indie ball and you're like, okay, well, how do I even make this happen? And you don't have the word of mouth connection or whatever, and you're not like, you don't know how the process works. Well, imagine if you could declare for this draft, and it doesn't mean you lose your college eligibility or anything like that. And then you get drafted, and then you can make a decision if you want to go play for that indie ball team or if you want to go return to school. Cause then it's like, now it's a decision as opposed to, you know, this thing that's just kind of floating out there. Whereas like college, going back for Kyle Hess, going back to Pittsburgh for a fifth year, that was always a decision. It was always there for him. It was right in front of him. It was something very tangible. It's like, well, what if we created more tangible opportunities for a player to say, no, I don't want to do that. Or, you know what? Maybe I should think about that. Maybe I should look into that a little bit more. So anyway, Jeff, that's just another thing that I'm, you know, kicking around here is, okay, August 1st, indie ball draft. I want to see all of those 23-year-old college players that are putting up stupid numbers at mid-majors getting picked. I want to see them all get picked. And I want to see them make that decision to say, you know what? I don't want to go play independent baseball. Sorry. Because I bet a lot of them say yes. I bet a lot of them are like, oh, someone's interested in me? I'm going to go try that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good place to put a pin in this conversation. Interesting topic. Independent baseball, another episode of the 90th percentile. For Jeff, for Matt, thanks for tuning in. Here we go. Yeah, this is crazy. 2000. 2000-